Welcome to another episode of the Multi-Asian Church Podcast. This is DJ Chuang, and I'm joined here with Ed Choi. And we're continuing our conversation about leading in a multi-Asian church context. And you can roll back to any of the previous five episodes to catch up on the conversation. And thank you for joining us. And we're talking about leadership development. So, Ed, where would you like to drill down on that topic?
Excellent, DJ. Well, I'm thinking specifically of what senior pastors can do to give ownership of vision to the next generation. Any specific examples? My own experience was that as I was given freedom and ownership, more so, not so much as an intentional leadership development type of thing, but it was like, oh, you're here, great, run with it, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking more in terms of what we can do as we bring in the next generation of leaders specifically to give, you know, not just tell them, here's what we want you to do, but how do we bring the next generation in to help them to own it, to give them ownership of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of have mixed feelings on this, and I'm a bit reluctant to name churches by name, but I guess I can talk about the specific conversations I've had.
Yeah, right.
So, anonymously, a church.
Sure.
A church that's kind of becoming more diverse, mostly Caucasian, and now having a significant portion that's Asian American. They realized in leadership development and sharing vision that what seemed to work better was to have more of a authoritarian approach to vision, and the person who is a pastor on staff is Asian American, and his role to mobilize volunteers and to mobilize leaders seemed to be, as it was described to me, that he would call people out rather than try to recruit or get buy-in. So the pastor leader would say something to the effect, this is what you should do, rather than say, hey, here's a great vision, and let's do it together. I guess it would be a whole different voice. And then the other thing that comes to mind about vision is it's much easier when the vision is developed collaboratively, so that everyone has a hand in creating and defining and unpacking the vision from the very beginning, and then therefore ownership is established in that process of creating the vision together.
Okay, this is great, DJ. Let me push it slightly to one side.
Yes.
I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but I don't know if I necessarily mean the initial, you know, vision of the church. Mm-hmm. Because I would agree with what you just said, that you know, to have the at least the collaborative involvement of the demographic, if you will, of the people that you're trying to reach, as broad as that might be, from whatever areas that might be. Maybe what I mean, and if it's as simple as that, I mean, if that's basically what you're seeing, and that's fairly, I don't know how universal that philosophy is, but then in terms of maybe fleshing out, putting skin on it, putting programs, if I could put it that way, you know, how do I give ownership of the let's say the ownership of the Sunday worship environment? I guess I'm thinking if I'm in a smaller kind of a church.
All right.
You know, maybe, you know, a few hundred.
All right.
I mean, which is larger in most places, but I mean, I'm not thinking of a mega church is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And there's some freedom, there's some flexibility, there is no, you know, prescribed program. So I want the next generation of leaders, maybe they're interns, maybe they're part-time staff, maybe they're new, you know, pastoral staff, whatever, and I want them to have ownership. Maybe this is the wrong question entirely, DJ, I'm not sure, but you know, or maybe in your example, the fact that the leader was saying to, you know, the next generation, this is what I want you to do, maybe that is what gave the ownership of that program to that person or that leader. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked at leadership development at that level in terms of ownership and as you describe, wanting to get a different angle on it. Let me take a step back and then I'll go towards where you were directing it. So vision sometimes can be established by kind of the prophet leader. And so the prophet leader might say, here's the vision that God gave me. And you can either get on board, or if you don't catch it, then there's other great churches that you could be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the buy-in or go somewhere else kind of approach. And then there's the collaborative idea that I described, where you have a community of people and then you collaboratively and work on the vision together. And by working on the vision together, you have shared ownership just because you've worked on it together. And then you have scenarios where it's kind of in between, that the vision gets fleshed out as people step into roles of leadership. And I think what's uncomfortable in the Asian American context is the call of leadership isn't something a typical or stereotypical Asian American wants to step into. So as I was preparing or just thinking about our upcoming podcast here tonight, I was thinking, what is it about Asian Americans that stereotypically does not aspire to leadership?
Yes.
And there's something in our Asian culture heritage that we're reluctant to step into the role of leadership. And I'm thinking back of a conference and a talk I heard from what's his name? He's a church consultant in the Midwest, pretty prominent guy, and he was describing leadership as a big part of leadership is just wanting to. Gifting helps, skills help, but having the desire or the ambition to is a huge piece. And so if that piece isn't there innately of themselves, it makes it a little or notably harder to step into leadership. So when it comes to this question or this thought about how do we help people own a vision or step into the role of leadership, there's just a lot of reluctance in the average person. And then when you bring in the culture of shame, it's like when you own something, then you're responsible for it. And if you make a mistake, man, that's shame, that's brokenness, and it's just very uncomfortable. So there seems to me to be a reluctance of ownership that may be unique to an Asian American context. So the harder you push that, you just might get some unspoken resistance, and maybe we need to reframe it as something that we own or share together, and maybe a different word would be more helpful for that. That we're in relationship, that we're in community, and this is what community looks like. Maybe that would be a much more effective approach.
Well, this is getting somewhere, DJ.
And as I say that, it's like, okay, the makeup of the family, and I think it's kind of triggering up some memories of childhood. It's like, man, you're a Chuang, and you're representing the Chuang family, and so because of that, then you're going to behave properly. You have your identity there, and it's not so much about ownership, it's about representing well, and it's about being part of the family. And so as you establish community and as you establish leadership, isn't so much the individual leader, it's the community, it's the family. And you want to belong and you want to do your part. That's more compelling than ownership.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I go back to the comment that you referred to, this other, you know, consultant. Mm-hmm. If there's something just so attractive about the community, let's say the community of leaders or the community in general, mm-hmm. then maybe there's going to be more of an openness to just contribute to that.
Yes.
In whatever way I need to, in whatever way I'm needed, or in whatever way my contribution fits.
Yes.
Rather than being forced into some type of, you know, prescribed mold or something.
Yeah, and the contrast would be, you know, there's for the more Asian cultured shaped person, it's much more compelling to succeed or to get a win for the family than it is for the individual.
Right.
So when I hear the word ownership, it tends to lean on the individual. But if you think of it as belonging and as being a part of something bigger in the immediate community and the family, boy, that's such a draw. That's a much stronger draw.
Right.
You want to belong. You don't want to just be a lone ranger.
Right.
Maybe you want to be missed. Actually, that came from a recent conversation. People just want to be missed. And that's so much more compelling for someone that's been strongly influenced by Asian Americans. And I just thought of the name that I was thinking of, the consultant that I heard talk from was Bill Easom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There we go. Bill Easom, yes, very good. Maybe just to push on one other angle on this for tonight, DJ, and that is, you know, I was just kind of flipping through some of the exponential materials, and I don't remember what website it was, but there were some video clips, and maybe you've seen it. Alan Hirsch does this, it's like a 3-minute video on risk.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that offhand or no?
I don't recall that particular video, but now I'm going to go look for it. And for listeners that are here, Exponential Conference is a great church planters conference end of April in Orlando, and both Ed and I will be there. I would love to meet you.
Yeah, absolutely. Somewhere in, you know, there's a free resource tab or whatever on the Exponential site, and in there somewhere there's like the top 5 video or whatever. Some other things in there, and Hirsch's videos like the top one. And anyway, he talks about in this video, it's quite a compelling argument or whatever, kind of somewhat addressing, you know, the American dream, the middle class or upper middle class comfort convenience type of Christianity that we have. You just come and come week after week and just sit there and be a consumer and so on.
Right.
And he just talks about how you don't see a whole lot of, you know, risk. And so risk is going to be cutting, is going to be an issue. And I'm just wondering, are you seeing more of a, in churches where there's risk, I think of, I can't remember any of the names, but there's a church plant out of an immigrant Asian church, I think in Houston or Austin. Where they moved into like this inner city neighborhood, and anyway, maybe the name not important, but anyway, huge risk.
Yes, that's right.
Huge risk.
I can think of 2 examples. So one in Houston and in Austin.
Okay. Well, yeah. Good. The point and what I want to get your input on is, do you see that as more of you've had a collaborative. Are those leaders folks who have had a collaborative type of exercise, and they have a group buy-in to that vision, and so it is the group in a sense that is, you know, the individuals are making up this group, and that group is taking the risk, as it were, and does that make it less of a risk in terms of the shame, or is that, you know, better way to say it is that a more positive way to go about it, particularly in an Asian American type of context.
Well, let me describe it this way. I'm not sure the vision, I think the implementation of the vision was done together as a community and in relationship with a fairly tight group of people. So it wasn't so much the primary leader trying to sell a vision and recruit people to it. It seems to me that these church communities that took a huge risk was because there was a group of people committed to each other taking the risk together. Yeah. And there's some parallel to how a church planter needs to build a core team. But sometimes that comes across as the sole church leader trying to sell the vision. Yeah, I think the Asian American flavor of that, it's pulling together people that would want to do life together, and then they can do church together. How's that?
Oh, that's great, DJ.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's such a nugget, and I think even when we first started this podcast, I mean, I'm thinking a lot. I know community and all that. I mean, I'm not trying to get away from that, but I probably was thinking a lot more of, you know, leadership development type of a program. But I think the reality is almost as simple as what you just said, that you do life together. Mm-hmm. As big or small as the group of people that God brings you, you mm-hmm. reach people.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like you said last week, mm-hmm. just do developing people
mm-hmm.
as it happens.
Yes,
you know, and I'm just thinking in my own heart and life right now. I'm trying to think more deeply about what it means to truly, you know, meet someone's needs. Yes. That is a leader or potential leader on it. And yes. I don't mean their wants, but truly, right. You know, what does God want me to do?
Right.
How does he want me to meet their needs?
Yeah.
And I just think, especially, you know, I was just reminded watching a couple of these videos the past couple of days, the exponential thing, just reminding me that there's just so much of what is quote unquote ministry is it's fruitless. And not to be critical of what anyone else is doing, but we can't just show up on Sundays and have some program and then have our, you know, go back to our comfortable, you know, whatever. And I think Alan Hirsch, even in his video, said, I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong if you're in the middle class, quote unquote. I mean, if you have right. some comforts. But we just, you know, in light of that, it makes the way of Jesus, if you know, harder.
Yeah, it is more challenging in a comfortable setting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is really great, DJ. This is a lot to think about for this next week, and I really appreciate your insights.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope it's a benefit to many who are listening as well. So this will conclude our episode here. We'll continue conversation, and you have a great trip to Tennessee there, Ed.
Awesome. Thanks, DJ.
Great. Thank you, Ed.